Woke up this morning sad and rueful, but also filled with pride and hope and with thanks to Gareth Southgate and the whole England squad for the best campaign by any England team in any tournament that I can remember. They made history. They lifted our spirits. They brought joy to this country, and I know that they will continue to do so. And to those who have been directing racist abuse at some of the players, I say shame on you, and I hope you will crawl back under the rock from which you emerged. Because this entire team played like heroes, and I'm sure that this is just the beginning of their achievements, and I say bring on Qatar next year, and let's also dare to start to hope that together with Ireland, our United Kingdom can host the World Cup in 2030. Turning now to step four of our roadmap, we've come to a stage in the pandemic when there is no easy answer and no obvious date for unlocking. We have cases rising significantly with more than 30,000 per day, and we can see what is happening across Europe as the Delta variant takes hold among our friends. We know we're going to see more hospitalizations and more deaths from COVID. But we also know that this wave was clearly foreseen by our scientists when we first set out that roadmap in February. And if anything, so far, we are in the middle range of their projections for infections and at the lower end of their projections for mortality. And we also know that if we were now to delay this fourth step, for instance, to September or later, then we would be reopening as the weather gets colder and as the virus acquires a greater natural advantage and when schools are back. And so we think now is the right moment to proceed when we have the natural firebreak of the school holidays in the next few days. And Chris and Patrick will set out in just a minute how we are meeting the four tests for step four in England. But it is absolutely vital that we proceed now with caution. And I cannot say this powerfully or emphatically enough. This pandemic is not over. This disease, coronavirus, continues to carry risks for you and your family. We cannot simply revert instantly from Monday the 19th of July to life as it was before COVID. We will stick to our plan to lift legal restrictions and to lift social distancing. But we expect and recommend that people wear a face covering in crowded and enclosed spaces where you come into contact with those you don't normally meet, such as on public transport. We're removing the government instruction to work from home where you can, but we don't expect that the whole country will return to their desks as one from Monday. And we're setting out guidance for business for a gradual return to work over the summer. And as a matter of social responsibility, we're urging nightclubs and other venues with large crowds to make use of the NHS COVID pass, which shows proof of vaccination, a recent negative test, or natural immunity as a means of entry. We're updating our guidance for the clinically extremely vulnerable on how they can keep themselves safe, and I generally urge everyone to keep thinking of others and to consider the risks. We'll keep our tough border policy, including quarantine for those arriving from red list countries, and we will keep the test, trace, and isolate system in place. Every week that goes by, we're getting hundreds of thousands more jabs into arms, and our delay to the roadmap that we announced last month has enabled us to get 7 million more jabs in the last 4 weeks alone. By next Monday, two-thirds of adults will have received a second dose, and every adult will have been offered a first dose. And it is the single most crucial thing now that you get that jab. A jab that can protect you and your family and allow you, for instance, to go on holiday. And it is, of course, only thanks to the vaccine program that we are able to take these cautious steps now. But to take these steps, we must be cautious and we must be vaccinated. So please, get that jab. Thanks very much. I'm now going to pass to Chris to do the slides.
Thank you, Prime Minister. First slide, please. As people will recall, there were four roadmap tests, and I'm going to go through each of them in turn. The first of them was that the vaccine deployment program continues successfully. And I think people are very aware of the fact that this is going very well. The NHS has rolled this out in a magnificent way, supported by volunteers, and people have come in very large numbers, with a majority of every age group in adulthood now having had their first vaccination, and the great, great majority of the older age groups having both first and second vaccinations. Next slide, please. The second test was that evidence shows the vaccines are sufficiently effective in reducing hospitalizations and deaths in those vaccinated. We've got real life data from the UK, which actually shows for the Delta variant, which is the one which is currently dominant, we have considerable confidence that one dose reduces by a reasonable margin, roughly a third, the chance of getting asymptomatic infection, but two doses reduce that very substantially further to somewhere between 78 and 80% reduction. These are estimates. And next slide, please. If we move on to people having hospitalization and deaths, these vaccines are substantially more effective than they are even against symptomatic disease. So one dose, a 69 to 88% reduction, and two doses, over 90% reduction in the chance of hospitalization. Not 100%, but these are very highly effective vaccines. Next slide, please. When it comes to the third test, infection rates do not risk a surge in hospitalizations, which would put unsustainable pressure on the NHS. Inevitably, we have to be more cautious in our interpretation of the data. At this point in time, as you can see from this slide, the rates of hospitalizations, whilst not trivial and rising, so over 2,700 people are in hospital with COVID at the moment, is way below both the first bit and the second bit of the peak, so autumn and spring of this year and spring of last year. However, next slide, please. If we look at the cases, admissions and deaths over time, we have to be aware of the fact that the way epidemics work is they double. Now, in the case of cases, the autumn wave, which is in orange here, and the current wave are going at very similar rates to what they did to the autumn wave last year. If we then look at admissions, and these are not on exactly the same scale, just a technical point, but what you can see is that whilst the cases are following almost an identical track to the previous wave, the admissions are going significantly below that, but they are still rising at a slower exponential rate. And then the third thing is the mortality rate, death rate, fortunately at this point in time, much lower than it was previously. But again, this is rising. So with all of these, the key question is at what point does the epidemic curve come to an end and turn over and the rates start to go down? And there cannot be certainty about this. So therefore, we cannot be quite as confident on this test as the others. But at this point, modelling data and other data would imply that if we go slowly with the next stage of the roadmap, the expectation is this will not reach the point where it is putting unsustainable pressure on the NHS. But to repeat the Prime Minister's points, there is an expectation, unfortunately, that the number of cases going to hospital will go up and the number of deaths will go up in the current wave. Next slide, please. The final test is that our assessment is that the risks are not fundamentally changed by a new variant of concern. And the Delta variant is now the dominant variant in the UK. So this is now the normal variant in the UK. So that's not a variant of concern anymore, which it was when we first talked about it in one of these press conferences. Looking at the other variants of concern, in the UK. The numbers are low and are not rising. And in fact, in several cases are in fact shrinking at this point in time. So we do not think at this point that there is any reason to think any current variants of concern are going to change the analysis that's been made. So therefore, three tests passed, I think, fairly clearly, one test with the caution that I put in terms of the data. I just, before I finish, wanted to just summarise where I think some of the scientific and medical opinion is to, in a sense, in support of what the Prime Minister has just said. There are three areas where there is really very overwhelming wide agreement between scientific and medical opinion, and there's one area where opinions are more mixed. There is very wide agreement, and was very wide agreement, that the four-week delay that we have just had to the roadmap was going to have a significant impact on reducing the amount of hospitalizations and deaths, and that opinion has not changed. So very strong view that that particular period of delay was an extremely important thing to do to reduce deaths, to reduce cases, and to reduce pressure on the NHS. Secondly, there is extremely wide agreement that whenever we go through the next step, there is going to be what's called an exit wave. There will be a wave associated with that. And that the slower we take it, the fewer the people will have COVID, the smaller the peak will be, and the smaller the number of people who go into hospital and die. So going very slowly through this step is really essential. And this, again, is an overwhelming view of the scientific people who've looked at this and of the medical profession. There was a letter on this by all the Royal Colleges of Medicine, for example, over the weekend. And so this is an overwhelming view. We should go slowly and steadily and cautiously, as the Prime Minister has laid out. There is less agreement about what is an ideal date to make a move. And the reason for that is that there is no such thing as an ideal date. All the possible dates have downsides. And as the Prime Minister has said, if we go at this point in time, we go at a point when there are still some people being vaccinated, but we are not going at a point when schools are just coming back, and we're not going to a point where we're going into autumn and winter. And the modelling studies that have been done on this largely show that all dates essentially tend to lead to broadly similar outcomes. Different models come to very slightly different conclusions, but there is no clear evidence in comparison to the previous occasion when a delay was clearly going to make a difference. There is no clear evidence that a delay now is going to make a difference. What is going to make a difference is going slowly. And the final thing, again, to reiterate that what the Prime Minister said, where there is overwhelming agreement, is that vaccination reduces the chances that you will catch COVID, that anybody who's vaccinated will have severe COVID or go into hospital, and it also reduces the chances that they will pass on COVID. So it both protects themselves, it protects all of us, and it protects other people as well. So the evidence on vaccinations is overwhelming. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chris. Patrick, anything to add before we go to the public? Let's go to questions from the public. Michael from Manchester.
As COVID restrictions are lifted and social interactions return, what criteria will be used to determine if any restrictions should return in future? For example, if death rates rose to a certain level or cases in hospitals or waiting lists grew in a certain area? Thank you.
Well, Michael, thank you very much. I can give you a straightforward answer on that from the policy perspective. We will keep all the data under constant review throughout the rest of this year, on probably, I'm afraid, into next year as well. And if we are seeing very exceptional circumstances that you describe, or the arrival of some new variant that we haven't bargained for, budgeted for, that really is causing us a real problem, then obviously we must rule nothing out. And I've been very, very clear about that. We must protect the public, and we will not hesitate to use the means that we have at our disposal. But the way things are working at the moment, we do think that if we are cautious and we go slowly, as Chris has said, that we can continue with the roadmap as it stands. That is our hope. But I wonder whether any Chris or Patrick want to add to that.
I think that's right, Prime Minister. the important thing is that we monitor this very carefully, all of the parameters you talked about, hospitalizations, deaths, and cases, and be aware that, of course, because epidemics double, you have to make the decision before you get to the stage that things look really bad. And so it's important to monitor this in real time, keep an eye on it, and make sure that if things go in the wrong direction, decisions are made early enough.
Thanks very much. Sarah from Brighton.
We know that two doses of the vaccine are very effective at reducing severe cases of COVID-19. But what is the evidence that the vaccine also prevents you from unknowingly passing the virus on? And how does the vaccine remove the need for self-isolation? Does having two doses of the vaccine mean you're less likely to infect others?
Sarah, very good question. I have a figure in my head of reduction of transmission of about 67% or something like that. But Chris or Patrick, do you want to comment on that?
And then Chris may want to come in on this. I mean, we haven't got absolute figures for Delta. So it's important to recognise that there's uncertainty around the numbers on this. But if you took out figures for Alpha, and if you took a sort of general approach to this from the data we've got, roughly speaking, the vaccinations are decreasing the chance of somebody vaccinated from catching the virus by, let's say, 50% or so, maybe a little higher after double vaccination, depending. Roughly, it looks like they're decreasing the risk of transmission, if you have caught virus, to somebody else by about 50%. So overall, that means as a vaccinated person, you're something like 70-75% less likely to be able to infect somebody else in any situation, because you're less likely to catch it and you're less likely to pass it on. And those figures will change as we get more data. But Chris, you may want to add.
No, I completely agree with those numbers. And I think just the thing to point out is that, of course, that means that roughly a quarter of people can still pass it on. And therefore, someone being vaccinated substantially reduces the risk to people around them, but does not eliminate that risk, which is the reason why isolation is still important if someone has COVID or has a high chance of having COVID.
And just to be clear, those figures are about likelihood of contracting the virus. As Chris said earlier on, the protection of vaccines against severe disease, hospitalizations and deaths are very much higher. And indeed, after two vaccination doses, are right up in the sort of 90%+.
Thank you. Hugh Pym, BBC.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Given the pressure on hospitals, will you end the requirement of NHS staff who've come into contact with a positive case to self-isolate, even if they've been double jabbed? And if so, when? Will you bring forward the change for the general public? If they've been double jabbed, they don't need to self-isolate, bring it forward from the middle of August. And a question for Sir Patrick Vallance and Chris Whitty. Can you spell out some of the risks involved with opening up on July the 19th in England, for example, to the NHS?
Yeah, a very good question, Hugh, about the restrictions on the NHS caused by the current measures. We will be looking at ways of trying to get the NHS back to operating in a pre-COVID way without the need for social distancing and for isolation, contact isolation. But you'll just have to wait a little bit for the Health Secretary to be setting out exactly how we want to do that. Plainly, as we reduce the times people have to wait for their care, we're going to want to get back to the NHS operating as much as possible as it was before. But that will be happening in the next few weeks, we hope. Patrick?
Well, there's no doubt that we are in a third wave of infection. Infections are rising rapidly, and I expect them to continue to rise. And the more mixing we have, the more infection is going to spread. So there's no doubt that step four will bring increases in spread of infection. And although the relationship between infections and hospitalization is different, it still exists. So the risk of hospitalization is something like fourfold lower than it was. And the risk of death is 9 or 10 times lower than it was, but it still exists. So the models which have been released today clearly show an expectation that infections will continue to rise if behavior returns immediately to pre-pandemic levels, that would be a very, very big rise. If we go slowly and cautiously, that will be less of a rise. But we can't escape the fact that any increase like that will be associated with an increase in hospitalizations and sadly with deaths as well. And that, I think, is the expectation that we should have over this next period as we go into a phase of opening up. And we're already seeing the effects of increased mixing with the wave as it stands already.
Could I just add two things to that? One, just to make the point that would be true irrespective of what the date was that this happened. This exit wave is going to happen whenever a release happens, but what will mitigate it is going slowly. And on the first one, on the NHS staff side, this has been discussed by senior clinicians, including the four UK CMO, chief medical officers. And what you're trying to do is balance two different things. Doctors, nurses, other medical and social care staff are dealing with more vulnerable people, so the risks of them having the disease and passing it on are greater. But if there's too few staff in a hospital or in a ward or in a nursing home, that is also potentially a danger to patients. And so what you're trying to do is balance two risks against one another and achieve that in the best way possible. And that's very much something which, as you know, is a key part of medicine. It's just a matter of balancing risks.
Thanks, Hugh. Carl Dinnan, ITV News.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Prime Minister, you used to say that these steps on the roadmap would be irreversible. Do you still believe that? And can I ask Chris Whitty about his tests, and specifically test number three that you talked us through? Do you have an idea of what level of daily admissions would be unsustainable for the NHS? Because SPIEM has said today that once you got halfway to that point, you'd have to take action and implement contingency plans. So what level of hospital admissions would be unsustainable, and how close do you think we might get to that level?
Carl, thanks. Yes, of course, I hope that the roadmap is irreversible. We've always said we hope that it will be irreversible, but in order to have an irreversible roadmap, we've also said it's got to be a cautious approach. That's why we waited those extra weeks to get 7 million more jabs into people's arms. That was why we took that step in June, on June the 14th. And why what we're saying now is, you know, people have got to, we will proceed on Monday the 19th, but we want people to remember that this pandemic is not over. We must proceed in a cautious way. And if we are cautious and we get vaccinated, if everybody takes the opportunity that they have to get vaccinated, then yes, we can make progress steadily. And that's what we want to achieve.
On the question you asked me, when there isn't a single number where below it things are fine and above it there's a big problem, things go up in kind of stages. You start off with pressure on the general system, then you get to a point where there may be a need to reduce elective care, and there's a long waiting list, so we want to try and avoid that if possible. And then you get into things where you're reducing urgent care, and then you start putting pressure on the wider emergency services. So there isn't a kind of cut-off point. What we would hope is that the peak that we will see, if people go very quietly, carefully, if we all go very carefully over the next period, will be significantly lower than the peak we saw in January, for example, which put huge pressure on the NHS. But I think to think that we're not going to have any pressure on the NHS is not fully realistic. And the other thing which is different this time round is previously we've done an intervention which has led to the whole country having a peak at roughly the same time. That may not be the case here. So we may have a situation where certain bits of the NHS are under pressure, and then that goes down, but other bits it goes up. So there may be pressure at different times around the country.
Thanks. Ben Kentish, LBC.
Thank you, Prime Minister. You've talked today about people needing to wear masks, expecting people to wear masks. But our country doesn't run on expectations. It runs on rules. Now, when we have rules in all areas of public life designed to protect, ensure people act in a way to protect others from speeding and drink driving, to facing fines of thousands of pounds, even for dropping litter in the street. Why in the middle of a global pandemic do you think that wearing a mask, covering your face and mouth, should be one of the few areas of public life where people are expected to behave in a certain way rather than told to do so. If I could just ask Sir Patrick, what does the science say about the rate of herd immunity, when the UK is likely to reach some degree of herd immunity, and therefore when we should see cases start to come down after the peak? And just finally to Chris Whitty, given we've heard figures today about the NHS backlog possibly hitting 13 million, how concerned are you in that context about the probability of cases rising, prevalence rising as high as you've outlined it's likely to be?
Thanks very much, Ben. On the issue of masks, we're really following the same principle that we're following with all the legislation that we've had in place. We're trying to move towards personal responsibility, people thinking about others as well as about themselves. And that applies to the social distancing, applies to how we think about the vulnerable, how we make sure that we continue to exercise extreme caution as we continue with the fight against a very dangerous disease. And clearly with masks, there's a world of difference, as I said last week, between sitting alone on an empty station platform or in a crowded tube train. And on a crowded tube train, we would, as a government, expect and recommend that people wear masks. And I've no doubt that that is what people will do.
In terms of immunity, we've now got high levels of antibodies across the country. By July the 19th, two-thirds of adults should be double vaccinated and every adult offered a single vaccine. So we're getting to really quite decent levels of antibody. And it's worth thinking of it not in terms of an absolute cutoff, but actually there's a continuum. And the more immunity there is across the population, the harder it is for the virus to spread, and certainly the more difficult it is for the virus to cause severe disease and hospitalization. So every bit of buildup of that becomes beneficial. And whether you reach a stage when you get to true herd immunity, I think, is a different issue, and it depends on things like the virus reproductive rate, whether it's distributed across all of the population, the immunity, whether there are pockets that have lower vaccination rates and so on. So it's really important that we get to everybody and get to particularly the young people who are now coming forward brilliantly for their vaccination, make sure they come forward really to get the vaccine that's offered, come back for the second dose. And we are on track to have significant levels of immunity that will really impede the ability of this virus to transmit and cause damage. And that will bring the possibility of future big waves would go at that point. I mean, you may get it if there was a vaccine escape, but we'd be in a much, much better position. So this reaching high levels of immunity is critically important.
I mean, the NHS has been doing a remarkable job in trying to reduce the waiting lists that have built up over the time that COVID's been putting pressure on the NHS, which is obviously now since March of last year. There is both inevitably some quite significant degree of overhang from that period. And at the moment, there is some pressure from COVID, and that is likely to go up over the next period. So inevitably, everybody who works in the NHS, and indeed everybody who might use it or has friends or relatives who might use it, is going to want to keep the numbers of cases right down. And that is one of the many reasons why we really want to urge people to take this really steadily, because that's the way we keep the numbers down, keep the pressure on the NHS lower, and make the possibility of clearing this number of cases much easier.
Thank you. Chris Smith, The Times.
Thank you. Chief Medical Officer, you said that going slowly is essential. So can you all be clear about exactly what you want us to do or not to do as of next week? Should we change our current habits at all or carry on sticking to current levels of social contacts? Should people not go to some of the nightclubs and other venues who are opening next week? And should people avoid parties to celebrate the end of restrictions? That kind of detail. And Prime Minister, picking up on your answer to Michael, are you making a direct link between people's behaviour and the risk of restrictions returning? And if you do need to act, what would the first thing you'd be reaching for?
Well, I'll have a go at that, Chris, first. I think what we want to do is get people to think carefully about the ending of the restrictions that were were announcing today, and to make sure, in the immortal words of JVT, Jonathan Van Tam, they don't rip the pants out of it or tear the pants out of it, I think is what he said ages ago. And said last week, don't be demob happy about this. This is not the end of COVID. It requires constant vigilance. It means thinking about others as well as yourself. It means thinking about wearing a face covering in confined spaces where you meet other people that you don't normally meet, as I've said, as we said earlier on, and we said last week. It means continuing to think about the risk of transmission to the shielded, the extremely vulnerable, how you behave with them in their presence. Obviously, exercising common sense, because the legal restrictions have come off, should not be taken as an invitation by everybody simply to have a great jubilee and freedom from any kind of caution or restraint. That's what we're saying. And I think what the scientists are saying is this is the right date, or is as good as any other date to do this, but it's got to be taken seriously, and we've got to go as slowly as we can, given the constraints we're under. And I think that, for me, that makes a great deal of sense. If we held off till September, if we waited to go for the legal unlockings that we are, then we'd be doing it, as I said, in a context of a great deal more risk from the weather. Plus, we wouldn't have the advantage of the school holidays and so on. This is about as good a time as any. But to do it properly and sensibly, everybody has got to be cautious.
I don't think that the things which are going to make a difference will come as any surprise to anybody in the UK over the next period. The things that we've all been doing for a long time, people have been incredibly good and incredibly patient at doing it. The hands, face, space thing, wash your hands, cover your face in crowded areas, avoid crowded areas where you can, avoid unnecessary meetings, but be sensible on it. And above all, the thing which is new, get yourself vaccinated. It protects yourself, it protects your family, it protects everyone around you. These are the things that people have done very steadily. And as the Prime Minister has said, the fact that we can move from working at home doesn't mean that we should rush at it. Everything should be done steadily. And it's really it's a message about going steadily. And that's what people have done all the way through this. They've been incredibly good at it, actually all the way through, across the country and all four nations. That's all we're really saying, is carry on being steady.
Can I just add two to that? One is the absolute necessity to continue self-isolating if you test positive. Very important to stop spread. And if you're symptomatic, get a test. And in reopening, make sure that ventilation gets a priority. So summer is quite a good time to do that, to obviously make sure windows are open and there's sufficient ventilation in buildings.
Thanks, Chris. Dan Bloom, The Mirror.
Hello, Prime Minister. While there's a lot of uncertainty, of course, we understand that the modelling for the government is pointing to roughly 100 to 200 deaths per day at the peak of the third wave. Is this a price that you're willing to pay for freedom, or is that sort of range inevitable now, whenever we unlock? And to the scientists, under what circumstances do you believe that restrictions would need to come back this autumn or winter, and how likely do you think that is to happen? And Prime Minister, third one, very quickly, if I may, you condemned the vile racism aimed at England players overnight. So does that mean you would now take the knee as they have? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dan. On the timing of the third wave and where we are, I think it was Chris put it very, very well, which was that there isn't an optimal time, but I think that the reality is that both deaths and hospitalizations are sadly going to rise whenever you go for an unlocking of the kind that we are, and we simply must, as Chris puts it, there will be an exit wave, and we simply have to recognise that. And as I on Black Lives Matter, and the importance of that. I simply repeat what I've said many, many times. I think people should feel free to show their respect and show how much they condemn racism in this country in any way that they choose. And I thought it was, I was there last night, and I noted that the whole crowd was respectful when our players took the knee, and they did not, I didn't hear a single boo myself.
I mean, in terms of, I mean, you know, we have said from quite a time ago that there's likely to be an increase in both COVID and other respiratory infections over winter. And I don't think that is a terribly controversial statement. That happens every winter, but we've now got COVID on top. For a variety of reasons, we might have a slightly more difficult winter for flu and a variety of other respiratory infections. That's very different. And, you know, that's, and that would probably lead to people taking sensible precautions as they are at the moment and as they have done for a while. That's very different from issues around restrictions, which are very much an issue for ministers. There is not an inevitability in any way that because we have a surge, which may lead to people thinking, okay, we need to be a bit more careful, that leads to anything which ministers have to do. That's just a reality that we're going to face in the coming winter and may well face in future winters.
Thanks very much, Dan. Esther Weber, Politico.
Given everything you've said today about moving slowly and steadily, how does that square with previous references to reopening as Freedom Day or Big Bang and this being irreversible? Do you think there's a danger of mixed messages? And would you like to take this opportunity to clarify to people that they need to hang on to their masks? And then secondly, particularly for the Prime Minister, he said at the beginning that we are still hoping to go ahead with the World Cup bid. And I just wondered, how can you expect that to go ahead after the scenes of disorder in Wembley yesterday?
Esther, thank you very much. First of all, on this step, I think it's crucial for everybody to understand that yes, this is a big package of measures that we're announcing, but it will only work as a fourth step if people are cautious in the way that they go ahead with it, and that's why I've said all the things that I've said this afternoon about how to do it. And I just underline everything that Chris and Patrick have said. In order for this to be irreversible, it's got to be cautious. But the most important thing is for everybody who gets an offer of a vaccine to take it up. We've done outstandingly well in this country. We have a higher rate of vaccination than virtually any other country in the world now. And that's greatly it's a great achievement. But we still have a lot of people, particularly younger people, who have the chance to take it up. And I really hope that they do in the next few days. And Esther, on your point about the World Cup bid, well, this is a long and difficult process. And I'm a veteran of the 2010 scenes in Zurich, which you probably forgot about, where we tried to get it last time, and which didn't go very well. But I think the UK does have a very good case together with Ireland, and we will be making that case. I think it was a shame that a small minority yesterday tried to spoil it or behave. I don't think that they damaged the atmosphere, certainly not in the stadium itself. But we will be looking at exactly what happened. I think there were particular difficulties in policing and enforcing an event in the context of the testing and the social distancing rules. But irrespective of that, I do think that the UK has a very, very and working together with Ireland has a a very good case. And, I wouldn't want to let my hopes run away with me, because I remember what it was like 10 years ago. But we will certainly give it our best shot. Okay, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you.